she was part of the most diverse group of Democratic presidential candidates ever. Now Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is the latest to call it quits.
She said that was one of the hardest parts in trying to decide whether she should drop out or not, the fact that she was, you know, the last woman standing.
And the impact of the coronavirus outbreak continues to rock Wall Street.
I do think that the fear that we've seen rippling through the markets in the last couple of days, the selling that we've seen, is sort of a parallel to the anxiety that a lot of people have at the moment about not knowing how bad this epidemic will get.
It's Thursday, March 5th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Stocks fell sharply today despite congressional passage of a funding bill to battle the coronavirus. After rising more than 1,000 points on Wednesday, the Dow Jones Industrials fell nearly 970 points. We'll have more on the market from our markets reporter Akane Otani and the businesses that were impacted later in the show. Oil prices swung higher earlier today on news that OPEC has reached a preliminary agreement to cut crude output by 1 million barrels a day. It's in response to expectations that the coronavirus epidemic will diminish global crude demand by more than 2 million barrels a day for the first half of this year. But that upswing didn't last long. Brent crude was down by more than 2% at the end of the day. The OPEC agreement also calls for another 500,000 barrels of daily cuts to be divided among the cartel's 10 Russia-led oil-producing allies. The plan needs the approval of Russia and other non-OPEC allies, which are set to weigh the proposal on Friday. In Washington, an $8.3 billion emergency spending bill to combat the coronavirus passed the Senate in a near-unanimous vote today after sailing through the House on Wednesday. The measure will fund research efforts to develop a vaccine, allocate money to state and local governments to battle the outbreak, and send dollars overseas to assist response efforts. It'll also ease requirements on Medicare beneficiaries receiving telemedical services and provide $20 million for U.S. small business loans. The bill now goes to President Trump, who is expected to sign it. India has loosened some restrictions on internet access for the Muslim-majority region of Kashmir. For the next 2 weeks, residents will be allowed to access Facebook, Twitter, and WhatsApp. They've been restricted since the government announced an end to the special status of the state of Jammu and Kashmir back in August. India's highest court ruled in January that indefinite suspension of internet services in Kashmir was unconstitutional. Lawmakers in the U.S. and the European Union have repeatedly called on Indian authorities to curb the restrictions, but local government officials haven't said what would happen after the two-week period is over. Federal prosecutors have charged former United Auto Workers president Gary Jones with conspiracy to embezzle union funds. Jones, who led the UAW through contract negotiations late last year with the Detroit carmakers, including a 40-day strike at General Motors, is accused of conspiring with a group of senior UAW leaders to embezzle more than $1 million to pay for private villas, liquor, golf, and other luxuries. The indictment makes Jones the highest-ranking ex-union official to be ensnared in the Justice Department's years-long corruption probe. We've been talking a lot about the 2020 election this week, with a bunch of candidates ending their campaigns just ahead of and following Super Tuesday. Senator Amy Klobuchar, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg have all called it quits. And today we're adding Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren to that list.
I will not be running for president in 2020, but I guarantee I will stay in the fight for the hardworking folks across this country who have gotten the short end of the stick over and over. That's been the fight of my life, and it will continue to be so.
Warren's progressive, policy-driven campaign caught fire last fall, making her an early favorite to win the nomination. But she had a disappointing showing in the first elections in the primary season, including this week's Super Tuesday. With more on the rise and fall of Warren's candidacy, we're joined by Wall Street Journal reporter Tarini Pardee. Tarini, last fall, Senator Warren was one of the frontrunners for the Democratic nomination, but today she became the last remaining woman among the top-tier candidates to drop out. How expected was this announcement?
At this point, given what we saw on Super Tuesday, Warren was essentially left with no choice but to drop out. She was facing a lot of pressure because she didn't win a single state. She came third in her home state of Massachusetts. And so, you know, as this race drags out with Joe Biden on one side and Bernie Sanders on the other, the more candidates who stay in, the longer the Democratic primary could become. And that's something that party leaders are trying to avoid if they want to beat Trump. And so they think that the field should sort of consolidate and so they can have a nominee sooner rather than later.
And she just didn't see a path forward, a viable path forward.
She did not. And, you know, ahead of Super Tuesday, her staff had said that, you know, they were looking at a contested convention as one of the ways that were left for her to essentially be the Democratic nominee. They were hoping that she would pick up enough delegates on Super Tuesday to make that case, but she didn't get that far. And at this point, she said she just saw no path forward.
Let's talk about the rise and fall of her candidacy, Tarini. People were talking about her back in 2016 when Hillary Clinton was running.
Right. She chose not to run in 2016. And this time around, you know, she started off with a few missteps. She really did get her footing back. She focused her campaign on ground game and organization. She built out a huge campaign, you know, that focused on raising money online, that really invested in field organizers in the early states. And early on, she did start getting a lot of traction. You know, if we go back to the late summer, early fall, she was starting to become the front runner in this primary. And then that slowly started, that slowly went away as more questions about her health care plan started cropping up. She eventually put out her own version of Medicare for All, and, you know, wasn't really able to sell that both to moderate voters and progressive voters. What she said today in her press conference was interesting. She said that when she started out, she was told that there were two lanes in the Democratic primary, the progressive lane and the moderate lane. And Joe Biden would be the front runner in the moderate lane, and Bernie Sanders was the incumbent on the progressive lane. She was told, she said, that there was no other path. And she said she said at the time that she didn't believe that she thought that she could change things. And she said today that, that you know, she was wrong, it seems, based on the way that this primary has played out.
Who among those remaining candidates, former Vice President Biden or Vermont Senator Sanders, might benefit from Warren's exit?
So we'll have to see, you know, if she decides to endorse. She said today that she's going to take some time to think and figure things out. You know, a lot of her supporters are, you know, more progressive. And if you, in that sense, they could be, you know, they could move to Bernie Sanders. But she also does have a lot of, you know, college educated women who aren't necessarily, you know, the Bernie Sanders type of voter. So she could, you know, some of her supporters could also back Joe Biden.
Tarini, Warren's departure leaves two white men in their 70s competing to run against President Trump, another white man in his 70s. What are we to make of the fact that this once historically diverse field has whittled down to this?
It was historically diverse. We had six women, if you're including Tulsi Gabbard and Marianne Williamson, we had six women running. Tulsi Gabbard is obviously still in the race, but has not gained any traction. She, Elizabeth Warren, was the last top tier woman still running. She sort of addressed that in her press conference.
One of the hardest parts of this is all those baby bonuses and all those little girls who are going to have to wait four more years. That's going to be hard.
What effect did Warren have on the 2020 presidential campaign, and will she continue to influence it going forward?
I think she will continue to have influence and be a big voice, especially if she decides to endorse either Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden going forward. How they bring up some of her policy ideas and whether they choose to incorporate those in their own campaign, that will be interesting to watch.
Wall Street Journal reporter Tarini Pardee. Thanks a lot, Tarini.
Thank you.
More than 97,000 people have now been infected by the coronavirus around the world, and over 3,300 have died. And those numbers continue to grow, including in the U.S. and Europe. In Italy, the number of new infected people has jumped by 25%. The European Union's Internal Market Commissioner said the outbreak is costing the tourism industry there 1 billion euros a month. Here's our reporter Matthew Dalton from Paris.
The authorities themselves are really concerned, and there's not much the industry can do about that. There's a whole satellite of industries, the archipelago of industries that depend on tourism. You've got restaurants, you've got conference organizers, you've got nightclubs, cafes, and then also the institutions themselves, like the Vatican itself gets a lot of revenue from the museum. And, you know, so long as these travel warnings and restrictions are in place, there's nothing they can do, really.
The coronavirus also continues to send global markets into a tailspin. After a brief rally on Wednesday, markets plummeted again today. Here to explain the roller coaster ride taken by Wall Street investors, as well as which business sectors are taking a hit, is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akane Otani. Akane, the markets are continuing a dizzying stretch of turbulence. Stocks rose Wednesday, but today they've fallen sharply and wiped out all of Wednesday's gains. Treasury yields are also tumbling. What is causing these huge swings in the market?
A lot of investors are very fixated right now on the development of the coronavirus epidemic that we've seen spreading well beyond China. And in recent days, the number of cases really rising in the U.S. as well. And that all raises the question of how much of a hit we could see economically around the world. And in recent days, it does seem like companies could take a bigger hit than investors had first expected.
All 11 of the S&P 500 sectors are down today. Let's talk about some of the sectors that are really being hit by coronavirus worries.
We've seen airline stocks doing very poorly since this whole thing started. Alaska Air is actually trading at its lowest level since 2014. Other sort of travel-related companies like Royal Caribbean Cruises, that's also trading at its lowest in a number of years. And then, of course, housing has been another area that has taken a hit. It's a little bit interesting because we actually saw the 30-year mortgage rate fall to a record low this week. And some analysts were saying that could potentially spur some more home buying. But on the flip side of that, when we do see all of these headlines about the coronavirus, a lot of economists do expect to see some pullback in consumer spending and on major purchases in particular. So that could take a toll on the housing sector as well.
What about the oil sector?
Energy prices have definitely taken a big hit, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that demand for energy has to do with economic activity. So generally, when things are looking quite good, you have factories running, you have consumers traveling, that all raises demand for oil prices and in turn sends those prices higher. But in the last couple of weeks, we've actually seen oil prices fall more than 20% from their highs. And so that really tells you something about the state of optimism there.
How is the epidemic changing consumer behavior?
We've already seen people canceling their travel plans for vacation. We've seen workers being asked to stay at home. We've seen conferences, concerts being canceled. All of that translates to generally fewer dollars being spent. And the thing is, we haven't really had the spread of this coronavirus here in the U.S. for long enough to trickle into the economic data. So in the coming months, that's really what we'll have to see, if things like employment, retail sales, consumer confidence, if those start taking a hit as well.
Is the stock market or the financial markets a good indicator of the economic impact?
I mean, they're definitely imperfect. There's never a perfect correlation between what the stock market is doing on any given day and how consumers are feeling. And that's even more true when you think about the fact that only roughly half of Americans do have exposure to the stock market. But I do think that the fear that we've seen rippling through the markets in the last couple of days, the selling that we've seen, is sort of a parallel to the anxiety that a lot of people have at the moment about not knowing how bad this epidemic will get.
Is it at all clear how big of an impact the coronavirus is expected to have on economic growth?
No. And I think a big part of that is because we just don't know how bad it could get from here. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, there were some estimates that came out with people saying if this is primarily a China thing, we could see global growth slow by X percent. And a lot of those numbers have since been revised, or folks have sort of stopped trying to put specific numbers out there because they're saying it's very difficult to tell if this is going to be a one quarter, two quarter type of slowdown, or if this is going to be something more serious.
The government is issuing the February jobs report on Friday. How might the report figure into market activity?
Hopefully, we'll be seeing numbers in line with estimates. I mean, we are expecting to see the pace of hiring slow down from the prior month, but still at a pretty good pace. And I think at this point, whatever we see from the jobs report will probably be on the back burner, just because investors are very fixated on the latest headlines about the coronavirus. But that being said, if we do see a worse than expected number, it could suggest that the economy, even sort of pre-coronavirus really starting to spread in the U.S., was not in as good shape as people had thought.
Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akani Otani. Thanks a lot, Akani.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, China is making use of its vast surveillance network to help stop the spread of coronavirus. That includes using artificial intelligence and big data to track people and flying drones in public places to scold citizens for gathering or forgetting to wear masks or wash their hands. Some say that's going a bit too far. Sophie Richardson is the China director with Human Rights Watch.
These new and different uses of technology around the coronavirus may help resolve some of the public health concerns, but it's also another way for the government to gather large amounts of information about people really effectively without their consent and in some cases without even their knowledge.
We have a video showing that surveillance network in action. Just head to WSJ.com/video. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.